I'd like to ask our next speaker to come forward. We've heard from Hank-Jan Brinkman yesterday. He presents a different approach to the markets in terms of basically a global approach. I'll just be brief. Hank-Jan Brinkman is a senior advisor for the economic policy in the World Food Program. He's also been involved with the United Nations, again with a senior economic affairs officer. And so he brings a worldview approach to markets and trade.
Thank you very much. I can start talking while the presentation is prepared. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. My talk will largely be based on a report that hopefully you have been able to pick up a copy outside. It's a flagship publication of the World Food Program that we issued in April this year. And it is exactly on the topic of this session. Some key messages that I would like to relay today. That the hungry poor are in a vicious cycle of hunger and poverty, feeding onto each other. And it's partly fueled by market failures. That does not help the hungry poor. And they are particularly affected. I mean, of all the income groups, the hungry poor are particularly affected. And I will go into a few examples of why that is. And therefore, market opportunities are quite elusive. Their market access is difficult. It's costly, it's risky, and they lack the assets to have a good to take the opportunities that are offered to them. But markets are also part of the solution. You need to, in your policies, your programs, your projects, you need to take account of the markets. You need to build on them. You need to complement them where necessary, and you need to enhance them so that the hungry poor can actually take advantage of them. And luckily, there are quite a few innovative approaches around, and we heard actually quite a few already over the last few days. Cash and vouchers, the Purchase for Progress, the WFP is implementing. Contract farming was mentioned, warehouse receipt systems, and index-based risk insurance, for example. The approach that we have taken is largely based on the work of Amartya Sen, and of course he was quite instrumental in pointing out the importance of markets in hunger, in famines in particular. Households need markets to buy food, to earn income, to sell commodities, to earn income to buy the food. And they're both on the input sides. They use the assets to sell what they have, whether it's labor or the products they grow on the land, to gain access to food and food markets, and will end up in food utilization. It's kind of some people think that very poor and remote areas, people still living in autarky with no interaction with markets, and I really think that is not the case. There is, I think, hardly anymore on this planet who doesn't have any interaction with markets anymore. This is to illustrate that vicious circle between hunger and poverty that is mediated by the markets. Hunger, as I pointed out yesterday, will lead to poor health, poor educational attainment, and low productivity, which are really driving poverty. But poverty also means having few assets that you can use, making it more difficult to have access to markets. Because you're poor, you're often risk-averse. You just cannot run the risk of trying something new, and that fuels, that keeps fueling the hunger-poverty cycle. And market failures particularly affect the poor. Poor in remote areas, for example, will have only a few traders, or maybe only one that comes during the harvest time, and they just have to take the price that trader offers. And of course, now with new technologies, that is of course changing, because And that helps to increase the power of the poor through, for example, mobile phones. They do know much better what is the price on the wholesale market. They often suffer from a lack of public goods, a lack of roads, and again, the market information systems. Market theories is really driven partly by information asymmetries. One agent in the market knows more than the other. And that's also the case for the hungry poor. They might know less about prices, for example. And all that leads to high transportation and high transaction cost. And that really inhibits markets. That means that prices are not able to generate the flows of food that are needed. Prices can be very, price differences can be very high in the same country, and they're not equalized by movements of prices because the transportation cost and the transaction cost are so high. Missing markets is really an important problem, and we have talked the whole session yesterday about it, is the missing of financial markets, but also land markets, for example, are often not functioning at all. And one of the most important market failures is that a market, of course, only responds to demand, not to needs. So if, for example, poor people, they do have very little purchasing power, very little demand, and it's no surprise that a market actually does not respond to that. Markets can definitely help to solve hunger, but it won't be completely eliminated. We cannot rely completely on markets because of information asymmetries, for example. And this is one of the most important consequences of a market failure, that farmers sell low and buy high. It is completely contrary to what you would expect participants in markets to do. You buy low and you sell high. But farmers in many countries around the world who are living at a very low income level, when the harvest comes, they need to sell because they need the cash, and there is no finance markets to get credit, and there's very little storage facilities, also a market failure. So what happens is that when prices are low, which is the yellow line, farmers are selling, which is the red line. And that is really driving one of the most fundamental forces behind the hunger-poverty trap. Another very important consequence is risk aversion. If you live at a subsistence level, you want to avoid taking on more risk. First of all, you need to manage your risk. And what you do is you engage in low-risk activities. And that often can be food production, using few inputs, because you can just not afford to buy fertilizer and then come to the conclusion that your price of the food that you're producing or the cash crop you're producing, the price has dropped and you can't not even cover the prices of the cost of the fertilizer. So you engage in low risk, which often means also low income activities. Sharecropping is one of the institutions that has been developed over time that takes care of this risk by sharing the risk between the farmer and the landowner. But also, farmers have to cope with risk. So when there is a shock, they have to make sure that the impact is as little as possible. And this is shown by this graph. At the top graph, you see two poor families. When there is a shock, like a drought, instituted by the red vertical, some poor families might sell assets, and they will fall in an asset poverty trap. And the green line, And will remain there. They will not be able to recover. They will sell, for example, the one or the two cows that they have, and they will not be able to get out of the poverty trap anymore. On the other hand, if you have the orange poor family, they might have also two cows, but they actually take the shock not by selling a cow, but by eating less food, which is the big orange line at the bottom. So they take the hit themselves, and you would see rapid increases in wasting, for example, or BMIs. But they will be, because they did not sell the cow, they will be able to recover after the drought. And this is a very important phenomenon that has been shown, for example, to exist in Zimbabwe, where it was a farmer with more than two cows sold one, but less than two did not. Access to markets is as I said, very costly and risky because of high entry barriers and high transportation cost. And the graph here of the price volatility of millet prices in Niger shows that the markets are actually very well integrated, that different areas in Niger, the prices really follow the same pattern, but they're still very volatile. And you also see the high peaks at the end of this graph in 2005 that really triggered a food crisis. I have to speed up a little bit because I have only a few minutes. Let me skip this one. I want to just talk a little bit about this graph, which shows the importance of trade when a shock hits. The blue bars is food imports, rice imports in Bangladesh from 1997 to early 2008. And the red are prices. Now, what happens when local prices are starting to increase in Dhaka? For example, because of a flood. And they increase to a level that it is cheaper to import from India, imports increase. And that is exactly what happened in 1997-98 when there was a huge flood in Bangladesh. And the red line, the local Dhaka prices, increased and approached the prices of imports from India. And suddenly you see, and by the way, Bangladesh liberalized the rice import in the 1990s, in 1994. So there was now the possibility of importers go with trucks across the border, get the rice from Delhi, and bring it to Dhaka. And you see a huge increase in rice imports that was able to withstand the huge shock that the floods caused to the rice production. Now, if you move all the way to the end, you see also the rice price increases on global markets and in Dhaka in particular again. There was a cyclone in at the end of 1997. Local prices were already increasing. And you see a bit of an import increase. But what really was a problematic was that India imposed an export ban of rice, of in particular the cheap rice that Bangladesh was consuming in October 2007. And this mechanism of prices making sure that food moves was not working as well as it should have. We also saw in last year how vulnerable the international trading system is, and this is partly because imports as percentage of production have been increasing, in particular in the Middle East and Northern Africa, but also in Africa and Latin America on the graph on the right. And if you then have a lot of countries importing and only a few exporters, the system becomes very vulnerable. And that is when you have also a few of these countries imposing exports ban, the system immediately collapses. And that is what happened. In 2000, 2005, three countries accounted for 50% of global exports. And that makes the system very vulnerable. I'm wrapping up here. I think I'll skip this one. And focus on a few important interventions that have been discussed. For example, targeted price subsidies for poor households. You have to be very careful with that, because if you do a non-targeted price subsidies that provide a lot of disincentive for the production system and can be very, very costly. But in certain cases, when it is targeted and you can, for example, use food crops that you know are only produced, consumed by poor households, that could work. I also want to really focus on the social protection, which has come up several times. It is very critical that for households that are poor and hungry to have a good safety net, to be able to take on the risks that markets generate. And whether that is through food or cash or vouchers or through insurance mechanisms, that is dependent on the situation of the particular country. I think I have to stop. And I'm happy to elaborate more during the question and answers period. Thank you very much.